at 7. At 9, an hour of global sounds from the African diaspora on Afropop. Then at 10, Selector Starkey and DJ Chuck spend 4 hours of funk, hip-hop, roots reggae, club classics, and more live on Old School Sessions. Saturday nights only on Radio Catskill.
This dude is dangerous.
WJFF Jeffersonville, Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Two Queens, offering coffee, tea, and bees. Located in Pete's Plaza, Narrowsburg, New York. TwoQueensCoffee.com. And from listeners like you.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and joining me in the WJFF studios today is Honesdale resident Doug Bell. Doug was born in Fort Madison, Iowa, and is the only male in a family of four children. His father was a Methodist minister, and his mother a very progressive, civic-minded woman ahead of her time. Doug's parents took their children on a months-long camping trip across the country every summer, visiting almost all of the national parks. Doug's favorite? Acadia in Maine. After 1.5 years of college, Doug left to hit the road, and he's going to share some of his travels that eventually led to Honesdale, where he settled down with his wife, Reza. They are both psychotherapists at their Honesdale Wellness Center. Welcome to Catskill Character, Doug.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me here, Donna. I appreciate this.
You mentioned this quote by the poet Khalil Gibran in a discussion we had earlier. Here it is. Your children are not your children. They are sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. It seems that it was a guiding principle of your parents' philosophy about raising children, would you say?
Yes, as the metaphor Khalil Gibran presents, parents are like a bow. And we're being directed out into the world, and we're the arrows. And they certainly gave us a very strong basis of how to live our lives and how to be independent. That was the main thing. They weren't helicopter parents by any means. I especially was very free to discover life on my own and in ways that were grounded in the principles that they imbued within me.
Yes, your parents, you would absolutely say, gave you freedom to find your own path.
Oh, yeah.
And they provided you and your sisters with so many traveling experiences across the country. Would you tell us about one of them?
Yeah, aside from camping out all over the country and various national parks, there was one experience that was quite unique. It was where we actually, my parents and I, when I was about 13, this was back in 64, we went to Mississippi and worked on a Quaker-sponsored project building a community center for a rural black community. And it was a very transformative experience. That was something that was quite exceptional.
So yeah. That had a really big impact on your life.
Yeah, at a very intense time in that part of the country. This is the movie Mississippi Burning was based on occurrences at that time. And we were right in the midst of some pretty intense racial strife and a lot of animosity.
Mm-hmm. To say the least.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you did soak up so much information and experience from every place you visited, and all of this contributes to the work you're doing now.
Yes.
What led you eventually to where you are and what you're doing now?
Well, beginning in college, I went because it was the thing to do. Everybody in my family had a college education, but it just didn't really seem at that time to be the right thing for me. So when I left, I began right away working, and a pattern evolved over the next several years where I would work for about a year and I was a medical orderly, a physical therapy aide, and I was working in a steel mill and a mental health inpatient unit. But I would travel in between, and I often hitchhike across country, which would really allow me to stay on the road for quite some time with very little money. And the experience there, especially after working in a steel mill where I intended to just do Europe, and that trip ended up in traveling overland to India, where I had quite a, again, a very transformative series of experiences.
Your life is one transformative experience after another. It's amazing.
Yeah, there was like a synchronicitous flow.
Yeah.
And things just fitting together quite perfectly and in amazing ways. And it was just quite a fascinating journey and still is.
Mm-hmm. What was it like for you working in a mental health, psychiatric setting with very ill people?
Well, in fact, that was at a time when the a lot of state hospitals across the country were closing down,
yeah,
and they were establishing comprehensive community mental health centers all over the country. And I just happened to be right at the ground floor of a new such agency in, well, East Chicago, Indiana, where I had all these jobs, when it was just forming. And I was hired by a psychiatrist who was really basing his hiring intention as a process, not necessarily of having people educated and credentialed, but people who had the capacity to really connect with the patients. So,
you know, if I could interrupt for
sure.
One second, I know exactly what that feels like, because when I was 2 months into school,
two months,
and they throw you right into an internship, and the interns worked with schizophrenics, basically. And they said that they had better results with the interns who basically knew nothing. They had better results with them working with the schizophrenics than these people who were highly educated. And I think it was that human connection, which I know you can relate to.
Yeah, there was one fellow in particular who was a chronic schizophrenic. He was just a bit older than I. And I developed a bond with him where he was able to convey to me some of the really extraordinary material that was going on in his mind. And I remember there was another guy my age who had his master's degree, and he actually approached me wondering how I was able to draw this guy out. So, yes, that's exactly what I sense you were experiencing. Without a whole lot of education, it's like sometimes a lot of knowledge can be a problem and a sort of a more of a deficit than an asset.
Because you then get up in your head.
Yeah, with all the theories and all of that. And so,
you know, I had an experience. I wonder how you would feel about this. This was after I was graduated and I was working in a mental health setting. And I had a patient who was presented as schizophrenic. And so I just went along with the treatment, quote unquote, that was, you know, what they did. And I thought about this recently. She was from Haiti.
Ah.
I don't think she was schizophrenic.
Cultural.
I think it was cultural. I think it was about voodoo. Because she, a lot of the stuff, when I think about it now, that she told me, and I just feel so badly, because had I been more adept at not worrying about what my supervisor was going to say, and just kind of went with the flow like I did when I was an intern, I think she would have had a better treatment with me.
Ah.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly, yeah. And I didn't have any such constraints. I didn't have
any.
And it was a really seat-of-the-pants kind of experience. And it was really, the staff were like family. We were constantly having meetings. We were getting a lot of guidance from the psychiatrist that headed it up. But it was really quite, it was an amazing. I spent about a year there. And then the psychiatrist that I worked with gave me a brochure about a training program that was integrating yoga and meditation into the practice of psychotherapy. And by that time, I had, well, I had studied Eastern concepts from the time I was 18, and I had just traveled before getting this job is when I had gone to India. And returning from India, I had the resolve to begin to practice what I had been studying intellectually. And all of this was coming together, and the opportunity that I had at this workshop, which, of course, I was the only non-credentialed, non-formally educated person at this workshop. And it so impressed me that I quit the job I had, and I moved in and became an assistant in what was called a combined therapy program, integrating holistic concepts, Ayurvedic medicine, holistic or homeopathy. And it was just an extraordinary experience, along with moving very deeply into Raja Yoga, Vedanta practices. This was the Himalayan Institute when it was headquartered in Chicago. Mm-hmm. That's how I ended up in Honesdale years later when they moved their headquarters to Honesdale.
Mm. Wow. You know, your patients get the benefit of so much rich experience that you've had. I mean, it's just amazing. You know, a lot of times people go to somebody with a PhD and they think, okay, this is it. I'm going to get treated now. But maybe that person went from undergrad to grad to a job.
Right.
And they don't have any experience.
By the way, once I did move back to Honesdale, I finished my degrees at the University of Scranton. Actually, an undergraduate in human services, very counseling oriented, very solid practical skills, and then I got my master's degree at a program run by the Himalayan Institute, but it was affiliated with the University of Scranton for just 4 years, which happened to be, since I was working full-time at Farview State Hospital for the Criminally Insane at this point.
Wow.
So I was just able to go half-time, part-time to the University, well, Himalayan Institute, and then as I was completing my final studies, there was a disillusion in that relationship. And by the way, I'm no longer affiliated with the Himalayan Institute. I won't get into that, but my grounding is very deeply in the holistic model. Raja Yoga, Vedanta, non-dualistic understanding that we're all interrelated, one mind, one beingness. The foundation of my work, really.
Yes. You know, it's true. It doesn't really matter. Like, I took the EST training.
Oh, yeah.
Warner Earhart, who was kind of he was a car salesman.
Yeah.
But he was a very smart guy, and he got a lot of experiences, just as you did. He went to India and studied so many different theories and what have you. But you can get something out of everything.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Right? So even though you're not affiliated with the Himalayan Institute any longer, you got a lot out of it.
Oh, immense.
And
immense.
It continues on because your patients get the benefit of all that.
Right. And like you say, there's you can get something out of so many things. And I found that actually once I left Farview, retired from that system in 93, I've been studying a number of other systems of therapy and different concepts that have been, they're very congruent, essentially. Like the work of Byron Katie, Nonviolent Communication by Rosenberg, The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff. And they're all basically saying the same thing. And then there's the Course in Miracles, which we don't need to get into the depths of what that is.
Right.
But that has actually become my foundation.
It's great stuff, Doug. I'm excited for your patience. We're going to take a quick break here and we'll come right back.
Okay.
You are listening to Catskill Character on WJFF Radio Catskill. And let me repeat that my guest today is psychotherapist based in Honesdale, Doug Bill. We'll be right back after these brief messages.
Support comes from the Homestead School, Montessori education, preschool through early college with campuses in Glens Bay and Hurleyville. Building the intelligence, creativity, connection, and skills for an ecological future since 1978. Homesteadschool.com. From the River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, New York. RiverReporter.com. And from listener donations at WJFFradio.org.
Support comes from Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, presenting Grammy-nominated global music stars Celtic Woman on their all-new tour, Postcards from Ireland, Sunday, June 5th.
Look how the lights of the town are shining now. Tonight, I'll be dancing around. I'm off on the road to Galway now. Look,
Celtic Woman, Postcards from Ireland, June 5th, BethelWoodsCenter.org.
She's never been one to stay at home. Home you'll go.
On the next On Being, the wise physician and lyrical author Rachel Naomi Remen on how our losses actually help us to live.
I have come to see loss as a stage in a process. It's not the bottom line. It's not the end of the story. What happens next is very, very important.
I'm Krista Tippett. Please join us.
If you've just joined us, this is Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg, and my guest today is Honesdale, PA psychotherapist Doug Bell. Doug's journey started when he traveled with his family every summer for a month, and this took him all over the U.S. to his later travels, often by himself, to India, Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan. Are you familiar with the Bob Seger song, Kathmandu? I think I'm going to Kathmandu, he sang. I think it's really where I'm going to. Well, Doug did go to Kathmandu, and he is steeped in a life of spiritual exploration. Doug's going to share the culmination of all his travels and studies vis-a-vis his book, The Namaste Principle. Let's get back to his story. Doug, on your WJFF show, Bodhi Talk, you used to say, we're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We're spiritual beings having a human experience. Explain for the listener what that means.
Well, essentially, that's really drawing from the holistic model that I've been so deeply steeped in. When I first began getting into that, it was seen as a kind of lunatic fringe fad. But now it's become mainstream. But being in a very materialistic culture, the physical side of that has been the emphasis. The truth is that we are spirit, eternal, invulnerable beings that are moving through one human beingness after another over the course of many lifetimes, is how I perceive it at least. So that line, remembering that we're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We're actually eternal beings moving into this life in a very purposeful manner. If we look at it as a classroom guided by love rather than a battleground guided by fear, which is really the dominant paradigm. In the title of my book, I refer to a paradigm shift from fear into love. And that's the essence of what we're talking about, becoming more aware of and aligned with spirit in our lives.
You know, I had a guest on several months ago who is a shamanic print therapist, and she's studying to be a medium. And she told me that energy never dies.
Right.
So when the body dies, where does that spirit, where does that energy go? It's still out there somewhere. And she, as a medium, she's learning to do find a connection with that energy.
Right. I've had many experiences with such people over the course of my life. And yes, and it's something that, to me, it's just the most natural kind of experience because, again, it's there. And certain individuals have cultivated the capacity to sense that and really move into a direct experience of that. And all the ones that I've spoken with point out, though, that this is actually natural. We all have that capacity.
She said the same thing, yeah.
One of my three sisters does a lot of shamanic work herself, and she reads tarot cards, and she goes to psychic fairs, and she's very much on the same page as I am. No wonder that we have the same parents.
Yeah, well, sometimes you could have a sister or a brother who's completely different from you, even though you have the same parents. But
right.
In this
Although
case,
I would say that all three of my sisters are very tuned into these concepts, but the one sister who is in Iowa is particularly tuned into this.
You just mentioned before that the full title of your book is Living the Namaste Principle, A Unifying Paradigm Shifting Fear to Love. You know, there's so much to cover.
Oh, no. Yes.
It's so crazy. I wish we had an hour or 2-3 hours. But if you could please give the listener some of the salient points of your book that you've been hitting on them.
The model that I've done in this book is to present the metaphor of how, like, we're in a house with many rooms. And in each room, we're going to encounter different phenomena, different people. Like in the bedroom, we'll have the relationships. In the classroom, we'll have students and teachers. And in the workplace, the workroom, the office. And in any of these rooms, there's going to be individuals that are tending to be very egotistical or very objectionable, very dysfunctional. And the key is in remembering that regardless of how they may appear to be, they still have this oneness that we share, which is divine, that's perfect. So to never exclude or fear, but always to love and to come from that loving stance. And in the classroom, we're looking at how there's a need. If somebody is really going off in a direction that is not very functional, to redirect them and to provide guidance in how what they're searching for to be included, to be accepted, to be loved, is not going to arise very naturally the way they're conducting their lives. So to direct them back to a more loving way, in a loving way, to do that from love. And that's essentially the Namaste principle, to just to remember that we're all in this together.
Yeah. That would be so great if we could all remember that all the time.
Yeah, sadly, even the formal religions that are really supposed to, by their very intention behind the creation of such systems, were designed to help us stay grounded in that loving perspective, but they themselves have become confused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of a corporation.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
We could go on and on about that.
Well, if you don't mind, Doug, I'd like to read a passage from your book. This is under the heading Challenge. An imperative we now, and I thought, you know, you wrote this a while ago, but it's so on time. An imperative we now face in our relationship to the earth, particularly for Western cultures, more than any we have so far discussed, is this: fear-based materialism, fueled by an interpretation of the Old Testament dictum about man's dominion over the earth, that is skewed by selfish interest in conquest and greed. It's left humanity and the planet in a pickle, as the saying goes. Endless wars and the seemingly insatiable pursuit of more and more possessions, which are the latest vogue, have so depleted or destroyed our natural resources that we may soon find ourselves on a planet which can no longer sustain us for the long term. Unfortunately, it's so true and so heavy.
Yeah, and I mean, this is something that has been pointed out for decades, and rather than acting on that, we've sabotaged further and further, and it's a very serious reality that we face.
You know, when I was reading that, I thought, if you could get Joe Biden's ear, what would you say to him?
You know, when I heard him speak at there was a funeral for one of the people killed in the Buffalo shootings. He was really moving into the sort of perspective that I would encourage. And yet, here's the essence. What I would most encourage all national leaders and politicians to engage in is a process of applying the Namaste principle, of course, and not demonizing each other, not resisting and pushing away, but remembering that indeed, we are all in this together, and whatever it is that we're putting out there, it's going to be coming back at us. You could call that the universal law of karma. You could align that with what Jesus taught in as you sow, so shall you reap, and to ground ourselves again in love and to recognize that the materialism and greed that comes from our belief in being this human being, physical body, is what engenders that fear-based perspective, and we need to recognize there is another way. It takes a great deal of work to really shift out of that. It would take me more than a few hours to bend Mr. Biden's ear.
Yes, absolutely. I understand you're running a new group in your office in Honesdale. Would you tell us about it?
This is something that I've done off and on over the, well, since 93. Basically talking about the concepts that are expressed in my book, Living the Namaste Principle. Mostly grounded in the concepts of A Course in Miracles, but I integrate yoga and holistic concepts and some of the other systems that I mentioned earlier. And it's really a very practical process where we're meeting together as students, traveling along this journey together, and we talk about our individual challenges and how there may be ways that we can adjust to the difficulties in a more loving way.
Has this group started already?
I'm planning to start it in mid-June, Wednesday nights from 7 to 9. You can contact me at either the Wellness Center, 253-6621, that's 570 area code, or on my email, which is dougfremontbill@gmail.com. That's one E in Fremont.
I just want to ask you one more question. You know, with all the craziness that's going on in the world today, the constant wars, the consumerism, the capitalistic greed. How does the Namaste principle sustain you? Is that what you use to sustain yourself?
It is, precisely. There's a guidance in A Course in Miracles. Seek not to change the world, seek rather to change your mind about the world. It's how we interpret what we're experiencing that leads us to feel what we feel. And I've chosen to look at what it is that's happening as part of a healing process. Mm-hmm. In homeopathy, there's something called miasmic conditions, which are very deep-seated, dark, kind of disgusting things that are so deep that it takes a number of remedies that are used. What happens, basically in homeopathy in general, is that what comes up from within, it's kind of a purging. Mm-hmm. So what we're experiencing on this planet is a purging of all the fear-based negativity. We're looking at it, and this is the key. We need to look at what it is that's happening, and we need to cut through the nonsense, the distortion, and see the truth that we're all in this together, and not to exclude anyone, but to love all. Yes. And that's a big challenge. But that's something that I've found works for me.
Doug, thank you so much for being here today. I've really, really enjoyed today, and I've enjoyed speaking with you in the previous times that we've spoken. And I've, even though it's hot in here, I am really kind of mesmerized by your knowledge and your experience. So thank you so much.
Well, it's been an honor to talk with you, Donna. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Catskill Character on WJFF Radio Catskill with today's guest, psychotherapist and author, Doug Bill. Doug's book, Living the Namaste Principle, A Unifying Paradigm Shifting Fear to Love, can be purchased on Amazon. And as Doug mentioned, for more information, he can be reached at 570-253-6621 or dougfremontbill@gmail.com. Catskill Character is on all but the last Saturday of the month when Greg Triggs brings us his show, Travels with Triggs. Be sure to tune in to hear more conversations with fascinating characters of the Catskills and beyond. Thanks so much for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Two Queens, offering coffee, tea, and bees, located in Pete's Plaza, Narrowsburg, New York. TwoQueensCoffee.com. And from listeners like you.
WJFF Jeffersonville.
Next weekend, Britain marks 70 years on the throne for Queen Elizabeth II. And on the Bag of Load of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we'll be hearing British and Irish folk songs about royalty. Join me, please, on Sunday afternoon at 3.
It's been 17 months since rioters stormed the Capitol in Washington, D.C. Now the House Select Committee investigating the attack begins new public hearings. Keep listening to NPR over the next few weeks for live special coverage and expert analysis of the January 6th committee's public hearings on June 9th from NPR News.
On Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Keeping you connected.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Neversink General Store, featuring an award-winning chef, smoked barbecue year-round, local products and catering. Now offering takeout. NeversinkGeneralStore.com. And from listeners like you.
Radio Catskill, WJFF, Jeffersonville.